So I've been up in New England for the last few weeks, kind of a mix of teaching and time with my family. One of the things I did was a five-day training for psychotherapists on bringing mindfulness into clinical practice. And as probably most of you are aware, it's really quite a hot area around the country, around probably all over, that more and more both science and clinically is showing how learning to pay attention, which is mindfulness training, is really the gateway to the kind of emotional healing that's really generative, that really makes a difference. And when we can, in some way, in the midst of reactivity, whatever it is, learn to pause and learn to notice what's happening with a really open presence, there's a kind of opening and a shifting and a deep sense of who we are. So that's really in the field. And it's not this mindfulness is not just personal healing. There's more and more awareness of how the potential for whether it's conflict between individuals or in a global way, really the possibility for world peace really arises out of this same capacity when we get caught in the fears rather than a spiraling of reactivity. Can we pause? Can we listen deeply to what's in here, what's within another, and break the patterns that cause so much separation and distance and suffering? So tonight I'd like to explore that, how we break the pattern of suffering with this mindful attention. And I'll be organizing the talk a bit around an acronym I find very helpful that I've introduced here a few times and will deepen the exploration. And the acronym is RAIN, R-A-I-N. I'll explain more as we go. But maybe share with you just a verse from the poet Ghalib. So just kind of let yourself take in this. For the raindrop, joy is in entering the river. Travel far enough into sorrow, tears turn into sighing. When after heavy rain the storm clouds disperse, is it not that they've wept themselves clear to the end? For the raindrop, joy is in entering the river. It's not easy to let this life unfold the way Ghalib says, you know, okay, so there's sorrow or there's fear, just let it play itself. And if we can, the promise is if we can let whatever arises play itself out in awareness, we get carried home to a quality of spaciousness and awakeness and love, belonging to the river. But it's not so easy, and we are completely rigged to do anything but being with. And the more we get on to ourselves, kind of really get what's happening, the more we see that we've got all sorts of clever strategies for leaving the present moment, for not being with what's uncomfortable. And we basically are ongoingly trying to control our experience, trying to manage things. And in Buddhist psychology, the reason why or how it emerged that way is got a very kind of elegant way of being presented. And it's really the same as Western psychology, which is that we incarnate and it's part of the perception of these body minds that what's here inside is me and what's out there is world. And so there's a duality to our experience. And with that sense of there's a membrane and what's in here is me and out there is you and the world, the primal mood of that separate self is fear. Now, it might not be that kind of fear like we feel gripped with panic, but there's some restlessness, some anxiety, some sense of need something more, some sense of vigilance about what might go wrong that goes hand in hand with a sense of separateness. So how does this turn into getting stuck, emotionally stuck and suffering? Is that with humans, we have this mind that's thinking about the separateness and develops stories around what's happening. And the stories, the belief that something's wrong with me, something's wrong with the world, lock us in to a whole biochemistry of fear or grief or shame. We get locked in. And in our culture, I mean, the sense of something wrong is universal. It's just biological. Something's wrong or it can go wrong. But in our culture, we mainline on a sense of something's wrong with me. And I think it's in a lot of cultures. The more competitive, the more a culture has hoops to jump through to be okay, the less there's a sense of community to remind us of our belonging, the more we get hooked into, on some level, a sense of personal failure or insufficiency. I talk about it as often as I can because, and I call it the trance of unworthiness, because if we don't realize that we have an underlying belief that we're falling short, it becomes the perception that rules our life. If we can't get it, how many moments our sense of okayness with others is being kind of contorted? If we don't get it, how hard it is for us to be intimate, because on some level we're afraid that others will find out and then we'll get pushed away. If we don't get it that we aren't free to really be creative, to really be wholehearted in our work and our play, because on some level there's this self-consciousness about not okayness, then it rules our life. Okay, these last 2 days I did 2 interviews, and one of them was with a corporate executive of a company that's billions of dollars. I mean, he's right near the top. And he called because he's in chronic anxiety. And it's because there's so much backbiting and competition, and everybody is, and there's when you're up there, people are jealous, that he's constantly having to fight to protect his turf. And he has a constant sense of, I'm going to make a misstep. The sense, I'm going to make a misstep. It doesn't matter how outwardly successful we are. It's deeply grooved into our psyche that we're supposed to meet some ideal, some standard of perfection we're carrying. And we each have an internal image of how we're supposed to be that we measure ourselves against. Those of you that have done workshops with me know this reading, I think, is a great teaching on spiritual fitness, but I'll share it because it's fun. If you can start the day without caffeine or pep pills, if you can be cheerful ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles, if you can understand when loved ones are too busy to give you time, if you can overlook when people take things out on you when, through no fault of yours, something goes wrong, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can face the world without lies and deceit, if you can conquer tension without medical help, if you can relax without liquor, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, then you are probably a dog. It's liberating, isn't it? It's liberating. We have these ideas, you know. And I always share this dog on the psychiatrist's couch who's saying, good dog, it's always good dog this and good dog that. Is it ever great dog? You know, it's like we have this idea, you know. And so it's the sense that I'm the problem. It's like whatever's going on, we might blame others. You might think, I'm not so much blaming myself. I'm mostly blaming others. That may be true. That may be where your conscious attention is. Certainly when we're going to war, we think the others are wrong. But deep down, there's a sense of not okayness. Even when we're most angry and violent, there's still some core sense of vulnerability and not okayness. So it's in our culture, and of course our parents and our families as messengers of the culture give us these kind of ideas of how we should be. And they kind of mirror who we are. I'll read you something I think is very powerful called Ordinary Heartbreak. She climbs easily onto the box that seats her above the swivel chair at adult height, crosses her legs, left ankle over right, and smooths the plastic apron over her lap while the beautician lifts her ponytail and mocks, coarse as a horse's tail. Then, as if that's all there is to say, the woman at once whacks off and tosses its foot and a half into the trash. And the little girl, who didn't want her hair cut, but long ago learned successfully how not to say what it is she wants, who even at this minute cannot quite grasp her shock and grief, is getting her hair cut. For convenience, her mother put it, the long waves gone that had been evidence at night when loosened from their clasp, she might secretly be a princess. Rather than cry out, she grips her own wrist and looks to her mother in the mirror. But her mother is too polite or too reserved or too indifferent to defend the girl. So the girl herself takes up indifference, while pain follows a hidden channel to a place almost unknown to her. Convinced as she is that her own emotions are not the ones her life depends on. She shifts her gaze from the mother's face back to the haircut now, so steadily as if this short-haired child she sees were someone else. I think an important inquiry is, what is it that a young being, a child, most wants and needs? And my sense is that it's a two-prong experience of being seen, like really being understood. I see you. I see what you are. I see who you are. And being loved. And of course, it can't just be that we're seen and rejected for what's seen. And it can't be that we're loved, but there's not a real recognition. There needs to be recognition. And for most of us, because our parents weren't so connected with their own awakeness, and their way of relating was conditioned by their wants and fears, what they saw was a projection of what they wanted or feared in us. We didn't get seen or loved in that very awake way. And so, like the little girl in the story, if our natural emotions were in some way told, we were told they were bad or are unhealthy or not good to express or that we should be different, we start developing our identity around that and disconnect from the energy and aliveness and passion that's really at our hearts. We no longer know ourselves. So I call this the kind of mood of unlove, where we begin to look at ourselves like our parents did. We don't pay attention to our inner life, and we don't hold with care our inner life. And I think a lot of spiritual practice is a kind of a spiritual reparenting. And it's not psychological in a narrow way. When I say spiritual reparenting, I mean learning to recognize and honor the life that's inside us in a way that wasn't done earlier. We're divided against ourselves for the most part. We don't listen to our inner life, and we certainly don't accept what's there with tenderness. So what we do instead, when we didn't get parented with love and understanding, is we develop this false self, a kind of persona. And basically, the function of the persona is to be accepted and respected and loved in the world. We develop what we hope will get good attention. And we all have our strategies. Some of us are workaholics, or like my friend that I described in this corporation, you know, incredible striver, constantly trying to prove. And others of us hide more and do more cover-up. There's a lot of shame-based kind of activity. Most of us stay pretty busy. That's one of our persona strategies. it kind of numbs the heart some and gives us a sense of being temporarily okay when we check things off the list. Many of us are addicted to some substance that will soothe the undercurrent of something's wrong. Some substance. It's either behaviors or substances. I have shared some years ago, I go on and off of caffeine. I drink usually a couple of cups of black tea a day and feel it when I don't and wish I wasn't hooked in a sense. And when I go to retreats, I'll gradually wean myself. I got back from a residential retreat, and my sister, Betsy, who many of you know, had put on my computer this little cartoon, and it had two couples at a dinner party. And the man's face was in his food. And the caption was, "Hal is now 99% caffeine-free." So we each have our addictions to keep us, you know, from really having... This is what we're doing. We're running away from the existential angst of something's wrong. We are frantically running away from that something's wrong feeling. One of the main ways that we run away is that we spend a huge amount of time trying to figure things out. Have you ever noticed how much time you're spending trying to figure things out? Now, I'm not saying that some figuring isn't necessary. It is. These cerebral cortexes have a good survival function. But we overdo. Here's a little bit about this figuring out. A story, again, some of you might remember. This is about a poodle, and I have two of them. A wealthy man went on a safari in Africa and decided to take his beloved pet poodle along for company. One day the poodle started chasing some butterflies and found himself totally lost. Wandering about trying to find his way back, he saw a leopard rapidly heading his way. The poodle thought, uh-oh. Luckily, he had noticed some bones on the ground close by and immediately turned his back to the approaching cat and started to chew on them. Just as the leopard was about to pounce, the poodle called out, "Boy, that was one delicious leopard, but I'm still hungry. I wonder if there's another around." Upon hearing this, the leopard halted his attack in mid-stride, a look of abject terror on his face. He crawled off into some nearby trees thinking, "Phew, that was a close call. That creature nearly got me." Meanwhile, a monkey had been watching this whole scene from high in a nearby tree. The monkey called out to the leopard, promising some valuable information in return for the leopard's protection. The leopard agreed to the deal and, of course, was furious to learn that he had just been made a fool of. The leopard, now with the monkey on his back, took off to find and eat the conniving canine. Once again, the poodle saw the leopard, this time with a monkey in its back, approaching. The poodle quickly put two and two together while realizing he wouldn't have time to escape. So he sat down with his back to his attackers, pretending he hadn't seen them. And just when they were close enough to hear, he exclaimed, "Where is that damn monkey? I sent him off an hour ago to bring me another leopard." So this is a tribute to the importance of having a clever mind. And, of course, as we know, we are too clever. We get hooked. We get hooked on our thinking. We get hooked on our planning. We get hooked on stories. I heard of a man and a woman sitting in a living room, and he says, "If I ever get in a vegetative state, you know, dependent on a machine, please, please pull the plug." At which point she gets up and pulls the plug at the TV, you know. So... we're hooked. You know how plugged in we are? I mean, I'm being light. You know, the point is we are trying to run away as fast as we can from discomfort, from a kind of inner angst of not okay. And until we see our strategies, whether it's being online all the time, or whether it's eating food more than we need every time we feel uncomfortable, or whether it's picking up the phone or trying to just busy ourselves with the next thing, until we see it, we don't really have the freedom to even choose, "Oh, okay, here. Probably our biggest strategy for leaving is judgment. Anytime you find yourself judging that's like a flag that there's something that's difficult to be with. For me, judging in the last few years, it's become a sadhana. That's a kind of a spiritual practice where it doesn't matter what I'm blaming or judging, I let that be my gateway to pause and deepen attention. Because it's really very powerful when we start noticing that whether we're blaming ourselves or blaming another, it's that activity is a buffer from what underneath is a real sense of it's out of control and not okay. We have these strategies, the judging self, the busy self, the striving self, the conniving self, whatever it is. And the most painful thing about them all, and this is where suffering comes in, is that our identity gets hitched to these strategies, these ways we are controlling life, and we forget who we are. That's the bottom line. That's the suffering. If you're suffering, it's because you have forgotten the truth of what you are. In some way, your idea and sense of your being has contracted and hitched to a small self story. And in that forgetting, the whole suffering of our human race arises. I sometimes describe it like the word persona from the Greeks as that mask that the actors wore in Greek theater. And that, you know, at the end of the day, they could have played a wild, vicious, you know, murderer, or they could have played a seductive, romancing, whatever. But at the end of the day, they put down the mask and they kind of back home, here I am. But we have our personas that we move through the world trying to get people to like us or leave us alone or whatever. And we don't know how to put them down because we have forgotten who's looking through that mask. Who's peering through right now? Who's listening, or what is listening? We've forgotten the silence that's listening. We've forgotten that sea of wakefulness that's really just noticing. We've forgotten that vast heart that doesn't have to fight or control. So I call it our naturalness. We've forgotten our naturalness. We've forgotten what we are when we're not hooked into fear-based activity. Our naturalness. So the way home, what I wanted to explore really in terms of a kind of practice of presence or presencing, I sometimes call it, is really when we get stuck, how do we pause and deepen attention? How do we, instead of our habitual strategy, how do we stay? That's what I want to explore. And it really begins with accepting, okay, so this is what's happening. Like even getting right now, recognizing, oh, stuck, painful, this is what's happening. I remember my first Buddhist meditation retreat that I went to, 1988, I think it was. One of the first nights the teacher gave a talk and said somewhere in the talk, the boundary to what you accept is the boundary to your freedom. The boundary to what you accept is the boundary to your freedom. So when we're hooked on our strategies of leaving and saying, nope, right now is not acceptable, or this experience is not acceptable, the sense of who I am is not acceptable, who you are is not okay, any moment like that, we're not free. And it was really great for me to hear that, because he said that, and then I just started reflecting on all the domains of my life that on some level I had an assumption, oh, this isn't right, or this has to change, or this isn't okay. I was going through a separation. So it was a sense of how he wasn't cooperating with my idea of things. And I was going through all sorts of stuff with my own health and my own body and my own judgmental nature, which that wasn't okay. And it was an amazing experience because I just started exploring what would it mean in this moment to absolutely accept things as they are. Just to recognize what's happening just in this moment. It's not like saying, okay, I want this to be like this for the rest of my life. And it's not like saying it should be like this, or it's not like adding on, this means I'm a bad person. It just, it's like this. One teacher, Ajahn Sumedho, American monk who teaches in Great Britain, that's a mantra for him, that whatever's going on, he'll notice, it's like this. It's kind of this gentle but honest acknowledging, okay, right now it's like this. So rain, R-A-I-N, the beginning of rain is recognizing and accepting what's here, R-A. It's like this. And it means that if we're sick and it's uncomfortable, the beginning of rain, of really this liberating, healing presence, is recognizing, okay, it's uncomfortable, it's unpleasant, and just pausing and making room for how it is, not doing our exit strategy. That's the beginning of rain. Carl Rogers said, it wasn't until I accepted myself just as I was that I was free to change. That this recognizing and accepting, or recognizing and allowing, is the precondition to change. Whatever's going on in our life, no matter how much we think it's bad, it's wrong, it should be different, in this moment, if we can say yes, just this moment, that's the precondition to change. One yoga teacher put it this way. She said, okay, put your left arm over your right, and she said, just kind of hug yourself. And then she said, now switch and put your right arm over your left and hug your evil twin, you know. So it's this R-A, recognize and allow, or recognize and accept, is saying, like, it's like this, that I'm going to say yes to this moment. That's really, when I wrote Radical Acceptance, that's really the thrust of it, that we begin that way. Now, you might just take a moment to reflect and just try that out for now. And then we're going to take the rest of the RAIN acronym and put it into action. So take a moment, as we do sometimes here, and let's just check in and sense how this is, how it fits with our lives. And take advantage of this pause right now. Wherever your mind or body has been, be here. Arrive again. You might take a few full breaths. And just invite whatever situation in your life wants attention, wherever there might be a sense of stuckness. Just invite that to come to mind. Something that's hard to accept in your life. It might be it's hard to accept something going on with your body. It might be something in a relationship. It might be something to do with work. Something where a lot of fear or anger or hurt arises that's difficult for you. For some, there might be a sense of something you're at war with or at odds with in your life. And you might sense how you've been relating to it in some way, that this is something you're trying to fix, something you're trying to get by or get past, make different, that this is kind of a scar or a stain on things, that it's wrong. You can't be okay if it doesn't change. Just sense what your old or habitual way of regarding this has been. Without added judgment, just to notice how you might have been at odds with this, just kind of habitually believing this is a bad thing in my life. And then just take some moments to sense the situation and how it plays through you right now, the unpleasant feelings about it. Just the whole kind of gestalt of it. Just let it be here. And just gently, it's like this. Okay, so this is an honest acknowledging. Okay, so right now it's like this. So that in some way you're just giving it room to be what it is for now. Recognizing and allowing this weather system, this part of life right now, just to be what it is. Just giving it room. It's like a friend of mine who, when it started getting really difficult, just said, okay, I'm just going to bow and say, okay, life's like this right now. And in that bowing, just honoring, okay, it's like this. There's a certain amount of space. So just kind of feel into that. And for some of you, you might find that just in this beginning of rain, of recognizing and allowing this situation, these feelings, just to be for now, there's a little bit of space. There's just a little bit of space or a little more tenderness. And some of you might find that you intend to say, okay, yes, it's like this. And everything new rises up and says, no, it's bad. I don't want it. This is just, I just feel like I'm going through the motions. That's okay. Just notice what happens. And when you'd like, just open your eyes. Now, when I do workshops and retreats where we start exploring rain, and we begin just the way we've began tonight, you know, choosing somewhere where we get stuck and reactive, and we've just basically kind of are at war with part of our lives. And especially, I'm at war with part of me. I don't like this behavior in me. How can I say it's like this? It's bad. It's bad that I do this. It's bad that I lash out. It's bad that I compulsively eat. Whatever it is, the situation, the challenge people run into with recognizing and allowing, RA, is that it feels like if I recognize and just allow, it'll never change. I'll get worse. It'll be out of control. People won't like me because I'll get, you know, become more and more depraved. You know, it goes like that. We have a fear of allowing. There's a reason we're frantically trying to control things. There is a fear that if we just recognize and allow, that this life will spiral into something horrific. People will do us in, we'll do ourselves in. So recognizing and allowing requires a deepening, a kind of a deepened intention. Okay, what does it really mean to open to this? And this is the I, which is investigate, where there is enough interest and commitment to realize what is really happening here. It's RAI, okay? So how do we investigate? Investigating is really a deepening of recognizing and allowing. It's where we even look more deeply and explore what are we believing, what are we feeling, where is it in the body, where there's a deepened commitment to experiencing what's here. That's the investigating. Another word for investigating would be intimacy, getting intimate with what's here. RAI. Now, I'll give you an example for myself, and this always happens that when I'm about to teach about something, I get, you know, God provides my examples in my own life, which is why sometimes I decide not to teach about fear and shame, you know. But anyway, here's your example for today. So I've shared with you, with many of you, I've had different health stuff coming up over the last year, and been feeling a lot better these last few months. One of the things that over the last number of years is that my knees have basically told me no go on running. And that was a very big letting go for me. I was very attached to running. So then I also can't sit cross-legged anymore for any length of time. You know, I since I was 20 or 21, that's like 34 years, I've been sitting, you know, meditating cross-legged. I just did in my knees. So then I discovered speed walking, and this is it, because it does not, there's not that impact. And so I just discovered it recently, so I got real excited about that. I hope you're hearing behind this attachment, a lot of attachment to the endorphins of exercise and just feeling good from it. So a few days ago, and I've been getting up really early and getting outside and feeling invigorated. A few days ago, I started my speed walking, but I immediately went up the hill and walked wrong and pulled something right away. And it just slipped. It just tripped off a very deep thing, this upwelling of frustration, and then this sense of it's not fair, and then a sense of life's against me, oppressed, I'm a victim, this body's just not working and it's only going downhill, and I'll never get the endorphins and good feelings I used to get from exercise. And it just rolled on and on, you know, and I'm just kind of slow, you know, my walk, I had to adjust my gait, but I'm still kind of walking in a way that wouldn't be really good for me. So, but there's some sense of being slammed again, like it was just the universe was really thwarting me. And then there's a mantra I often have, which is, may this serve awakening. It's like it comes very quickly to me that when I'm suffering, that may this suffering serve awakening. So I paused. I slowed down. I really slowed down. So I'm walking very, very slowly and breathing. And then I just started practicing rain. I said, okay. So it's like this, you know, right now, frustration, feeling of victimized. What am I believing? And there was some, you know, kind of deep down belief that everything's being taken away, you know, of the loss, and that I won't be able to enjoy life. I won't really be able to live fully. That was the belief in some way. And that recognizing the belief that I'm not going to be able to live fully brought up grief, because that's loss of life. So I was walking and weeping and slowing down even more. And I kept feeling into where the grief was. It's just this basic sense of loving life and losing life and loving and losing and loving. And gradually there was just this space of tenderness that cherished life. And the sadness was still there. I mean, the truth is we do lose life and we love life. And when we slow down enough, that space of loving is big enough for the currents of sadness. So rain, recognize and allow, just saying, okay, it's like this. And then investigating, what am I believing, feeling it, opening to it. And then there's a space that opened up, which I really call the N, which is, you might think of N as not identified. That I was no longer identified with the small, oppressed self. I was free from that. There was still sadness, but not a small self that was being creamed by the universe. It just was sadness, which itself isn't suffering. It's a current that's in the river. So that's, whether you call it non-identification or returning to naturalness, we're no longer hitched or confined by the fears and the wants and the reactivity. And who are you when you're no longer managing and controlling and hitched by fear? There's a naturalness that really is just awake, listens. There's a stillness. There's a tenderness. So for me, the rain brought me back in a way to here and to this sense of caring and really appreciating. I was walking very slowly, and then the birds, I all of a sudden heard the birds at a level I hadn't been hearing when I had been doing my speed walking. I just didn't take them in that way. All of a sudden, the sounds of the birds and the crickets and the smells and seeing the crepe myrtle, and it just all was very vivid. And I realized that what I was longing for and grieving about, living fully, was already here. That is the realization. Whatever we're longing for, whatever we think is missing, with this rain, with remembering to pause and recognize and allow and deepen that with investigation and intimacy, we find it here. I often get asked how we practice this with others, especially when we're in the thick of a reactive kind of drama with another person. How do you say, okay, wait a minute, rain, okay, recognize, you know. And just to say, it could be awkward unless you have an agreement ahead of time, which, by the way, is actually quite useful, especially if you're in a good friendship or a partnership. It's an incredibly powerful thing to have a commitment to pause. Our life patterns will keep on rerunning and rerunning and rerunning unless we pause. Unless in some version, and you don't have to, if the RAIN acronym doesn't work for you, it doesn't matter, it's presence. Unless we pause and take the time to come back home, we will keep replaying the same patterns that push people away, are over enmesh us, are leave us feeling guilty, 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 like we have to control, control, control. So one student that I worked with up in New England was locked into a habitual pattern with her husband where she was always wanting them to have special time together, and he was always not quite making the time to carve out the space, and in some way very preoccupied, and she just felt like he wasn't there. And she'd get very angry and blaming and then kind of pick on him for whatever was wrong and make him, basically the message is you're a disappointment, you know. And so she started practicing RAIN. In the past, when she'd let him know he was a disappointment, of course the pattern would be then he'd be really defensive and blame back and say, well, you're so judgmental, it doesn't make me feel invited into a space with you. And you can see how those things, very familiar patterns. So she decided to pause, and that she would, when she felt those feelings of being pushed away, like he wasn't showing up, she was going to pause and take a time out. And that's really a time out's really healthy for kids, for adults, for what it, you know, dogs, the whole thing. So she would do that, and she just asked herself, okay, what am I believing? And by the way, that's a really good question for the I segment of RAIN. You know, to recognize and allow. And then just sensitively, what am I believing? And how does this belief feel in this body? And her belief was, he doesn't love me. He's doing this because he doesn't love me, which is really because I'm not lovable. And no one's going to want to be close to me. And then in the deepest way, I'll always be alone. Again, that's a unraveling that's in many of our nervous systems and psyches. It's the mood of unlove. So she would get to that. If she paused and was on her own, rather than the whole drama of he's bad, this, that, unlovable. And when she could stay, and this is really learning to stay, and she did, as we've done here many times, the palm where she just bring her hand to her heart. So there was some sense of offering her own being presence when she could feel that sense of unlove. There'd be a shift in her sense of who she was. This is the core of the Buddha's teachings, that presence opens us out of a small sense of who we are, reconnects us with an openness, awakeness, tenderness. So when she stayed and she felt the mood of unlove and then offered some presence to her own heart, she became a kind of compassionate space that could then be with the life that was inside her. Presence wakes us up from these ideas of a deficient small self and reconnects us with wholeness. This is a poem from Rashani that I love to reflect on and read. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside that is unbreakable and whole. So this practice of presencing, of recognizing and allowing and then deepening with investigating intimacy, it's really the alchemy of waking up. It's the alchemy of really a kind of healing where we shift in a profound way from an idea of ourself that's inevitably small to an experience of beingness that really words don't describe well, but it's through being with the brokenness that we discover that wholeness and that silence and that beauty and that mystery. This is really the alchemy of RAIN, of waking up. So I'd like to have us do another meditation, but just to say, I kind of mentioned at the beginning that this is not a personal healing path. This is really a path of awakening that has to do with our own psyches and the awakening of all beings in a global way. And it very much affects the relational field. For this woman that I mentioned, when she had a shift of her sense of identity from the self that was being pushed away to a kind of spacious sense of compassion, and still there was a feeling of a hurt heart there, she could then go and speak with her husband. And as long as there was a sense of some connection with her own wholeness, she was speaking not from a place of blame, but just an honest place of saying, ouch. And when he could encounter her and she was just saying, ouch, then he could be compassionate. If we can meet each other in that way, where we can speak from and have some connection with a wholeness, where our identity is not so shrunk, rather than the same reactive dance, we open up the possibility of true intimacy with each other. True intimacy. So let's just practice a little before we close. Just do a little bit of this RAIN together. And as we did before, let this pausing right now be an invitation to really come home right into the moment. Just take some moments right here to breathe. And with a kind of sincerity, just sense yourself here. Our suffering is when we forget who we are, when we live in the ideas and sense of a contracted self, an angry self, a violated self, an oppressed self. And our freedom is when we have that courage to deepen our attention and rediscover really the truth and mystery of what we are. So as before, you might sense if there's a situation you'd like to pay more attention to in your life, and it might be the same one. You might find that that really has some juice or some charge, and it wants some untangling. It wants your presence. Sense part of your life that wants your presence. It might be a place that you've turned on yourself that you're at war with yourself, or you're hooked on judging and blaming inwardly. And it might be somewhere you're at war with someone else. And sometimes it's hard to kind of locate or settle into something, and don't make that wrong. Just let that be as it is. Just let yourself relax and just notice, well, what is it that really bothers me about this? Or what am I really afraid of? So sensing some situation where you get stuck, where you're reactive, afraid, angry, hurt. And to start with, just to acknowledge it honestly. It's like this. So just a moment of truthfulness, of pausing to let there be a kind of recognizing and allowing of, okay, so it's like this right now. It's a kind of clean recognition that doesn't add anything. It's like this and, boy, am I bad, or I'm in trouble, or I blew it, or it's like this, okay, it's hard. And just have that sincere intent now to stay a little, to investigate, to offer some awareness and presence. And you might say, well, what am I believing? What am I believing might go wrong? What am I believing about myself? About what this means about my life? What this means about me? Does it mean that you'll always fail, or always be unlovable, or always be alone, or that others can never be trusted? Sense the felt sense of what this brings up for you, this belief or feeling. What's it like in your body when you're living in this kind of contraction or reaction? When you're feeling oppressed or rejected or alienated or bad. So this is investigating a kind of willingness to get intimate with what's painful, with the brokenness or imprisoned feeling or tightness. And if it helps you to put your hand on your heart in a very gentle way, this is a powerful practice of compassion where you're beginning to really just simply offer a kind presence to what's difficult. It's almost like these are waves of experience and you become more the ocean, more the space it's happening in. For some, just offering a message, I care about this suffering. Or as this Hawaiian healer that is so, it's got this mantra, I'm sorry, I love you. Just a kind of message inwardly that deepens this sense of investigating and intimacy. So with rain, we recognize and allow what's here. We investigate or become more intimate. And in that presence, that investigating and intimacy, begin to sense who you really are in this. Sense your being as the very presence that's attending. Just breathing with what's here, offering presence to what's here, sensing the naturalness that opens up, that kind of space of awakeness and kindness that really is your nature. Whatever's going on right now, to just say yes, don't make it wrong. If you're distracted, if you feel numb or preoccupied, it's like this. This too. That's another mantra. This too. Just recognize and allow what's here. Unconditional yes. For the raindrop, joy is in entering the river. Travel far enough into sorrow, tears turn into sighing. When after heavy rain, the storm clouds disperse, is it not that they've wept themselves clear to the end? In these last few moments, you can let go of all ideas or stories, even of the word rain or any idea of doing something right now. And just to explore in a very simple way, being right here. Whatever is happening right now, can you just notice and allow? Senses wide open, listening to and feeling the entire moment. Close with a short metta or loving kindness prayer. May we be filled with loving presence, held in loving presence. May we know loving presence as our nature. May all beings everywhere touch this natural and great peace, resting in the truth of what we are. May there be peace here and everywhere. May these lives serve that peace, serve that awakening to love. May all beings everywhere awaken and be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.